Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, marked safe from the coronavirus. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, you can hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Not meaning to mock this coronavirus thing. I understand that people have died from it. I understand it's a serious event, but I also understand that about 60,000 people die every year of the flu. And I do think that, especially in the United States, this has been a little overblown by the media. So we'll see what happens. Everybody stay safe, but let's not panic, okay? Anyway, folks, last night, the WWE put on their Monday Night Raw following the Elimination Chamber. I should have said on the Elimination Chamber review show that the WWE significantly cut the soundtrack during the women's match when Shayna Baszler was just stalling for time. Had some people from Philly report to me that that audience was booing out of the building, chanting, "This is bullshit." They absolutely hated it. Absolutely hated it. So they needed to follow up a little bit, and they start with Becky Lynch coming out to a really good ovation. Someone must have got the memo to Becky Lynch that it's probably not a good idea to wear a big crown and weird sunglasses and say things like, "I could beat everybody in the locker room all by myself," and stuff like that, because, of course, that's being a heel. So this week she doesn't do any of that. This week she comes out, and she's the more humble Becky Lynch, who says, "Look, I'm not stupid. I see that she tore through everybody in the cage, first time in history that anybody eliminated everybody in the Elimination Chamber by themselves. I realize that she took care of Asuka in a minute and a half, and it took me years to be able to beat her. I get that. But I'm still going to get by her. I'm still going to find a way to win." I mean, it's a good enough promo. There was no real response from Shayna Baszler. There really didn't need to be. It was what it was. It was trying to regenerate a little bit of Becky Lynch's pop from the confusing couple of weeks where she came out very arrogant and very self-confident and kind of flippantly dismissing everybody. And I think the WWE figured they needed this moment, and they got it. What do you think of it, Mike?
I like the moment. I also like what she said, you know, and how she said it. And so this is a really good way to start out Raw.
Yeah, I think that they needed to do it because the last couple of weeks, Becky Lynch has been acting really strange. Like I said, it was almost like they were going to flip her or something. So it was good to see that they decided, no, let's settle in. And they're fully committed now to the Shayna Baszler-Becky Lynch feud. Let's see where this goes. I'll be interested to see if Becky Lynch decides, what the WWE decides, whether they decide to give Becky Lynch the time off and give Baszler the belt and maybe bring back Ronda to fight Baszler in the meantime, whether they decide Baszler's not the person they think she is and they tell Becky Lynch, "You're not going to be able to get that much time off." It'll be interesting to see where the WWE goes on this. First match of the night, Rey Mysterio versus Angel Garza. And they've been using Angel Garza a lot as like the first match of the night type thing to really warm the crowd up. And Angel Garza, who obviously is not one bit concerned about the coronavirus, is letting people in the audience kiss him. And you know, I said to myself watching this match, it's going to be a really good match. I already knew that. And I said to myself, gee, this is really going to solidify things for Garza because, you know, at this stage of his career, Rey is close to retirement. He hasn't got a lot to do. His main role in WWE is to help put the younger talent over. And gee, did they ever put that young upstart who needs a victory over when they let Rey Mysterio pin him clean? I don't know what to say. The WWE does this all the time. Rather than to run with their new talent and say, well, it's time that the older talent who's getting ready to retire takes a back seat to the new talent who is getting ready to be our future, they do just the opposite and say, cling on to the past, cling on to the past, bury the future, cling on to the past. I don't get it. Of course, the feud's going to continue, but it doesn't matter. This is the first time now we've seen Angel Garza pin clean. It's not by his cousin Carrillo, which could have been perhaps justifiable. They're both young and new, so whichever one you decided to let have the victory, it would have helped. Explain to me what you have planned for Rey Mysterio that's so important he needed this victory. Does he have a huge match at WrestleMania we don't know about? Is he going to be the guy fighting Andrade at WrestleMania? If so, that's a mistake. People don't want to see that. I don't get it. I think this is a terrible booking decision. You want to have Garza disqualified because it's Zelina Vega's interference? Fine. You want to have him counted out because he decides, I don't need this, and walks away? Fine. I don't know about pin clean by Rey Mysterio, who's dropping matches to everybody on his way out the door. I don't get it. I just don't get it. So while it was a very good match, Todd, I don't get the ending. Why would they promote somebody like Rey Mysterio, who really is literally on his way out the door?
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, I think they gave the victory to the wrong guy, like Rey Mysterio. If I was booking that match, I would have to match the same, but have Garza get the victory over Rey Mysterio.
He could have cheated to win, or he could have lost by DQ, or he could have lost by countout or something. But a clean pinfall to Rey Mysterio, who hasn't been built up as to be much of a world beater, Mike, doesn't do much for Garza. I don't know why they keep undermining their young talent.
I don't know why they keep doing that as well. And again, it doesn't help Zelina Vega. If she's supposed to be his manager, how does him losing help Zelina Vega?
It doesn't. It doesn't. So now let's get this right. She got Andrade back, and he got a victory over Humberto, okay? But now her new charge, Angel Garza, loses his first match. I don't get this. I thought the object of this was Zelina Vega and her new stable is becoming extraordinarily tough to beat. She's got two guys who could be the future of the WWE. Opposing them is a veteran who's taken a young guy in Humberto under his wing. And they're trying to conquer them, but they're having their trouble because they're cheaters and they're shortcut artists and all that kind of stuff. And ultimately, maybe you get Humberto to get a win. No question about it. Just like he did before in the tag team match, you know, he got the pin on Andrade. That makes sense. For Rey Mysterio to win this match, to go on to bigger and better things because he's that young upstart who needs the push, doesn't. I don't get that. I just don't get it. It seems counterproductive to me. Let me go to the phones. Caller, are you there? Hello. No, he's not there. I don't know, Mike. I think that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, we really need to rethink as the WWE, how often they bring up young talent and then let the older talent bury them.
Yeah, I mean, and look, that goes into the fact that, you know, also into the fact that people losing in their hometowns or near their hometowns or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I've seen older talent beat people like Bailey in San Jose, and them not even think twice about it. So, yeah, they need to rethink some of the things they need to do. And I got a little bit more to say about her, about Zelina Vega, but that they'll wait until after we get past Andrade.
Yeah, look, the bottom line is you should have had Angel Garza do something to Rey and get disqualified. Hit him with a chair, do something where it's like, okay, well, this Garza guy is going to be hard to beat. And he's, you know, he's going to, if he thinks he's going to get beat, he'd rather get disqualified. He's that type of person. No, you've already, you've blown your load now. People have seen him beat, so now they're like, oh, okay, he's not going to be that tough. I don't know why you do that. Anyway, we get a Rhea Ripley package. Showing her going into the site of WrestleMania, admiring the fact there are so many seats and she's going to wrestle there for the first time. And then we get Charlotte to come out and kind of rain on her parade and say, you're never going to be me. Rhea Ripley comes out and basically just punches her in the face. Now, I guess the Rhea Ripley package was designed to make Rhea Ripley appear more like the face, because she never does when she appears. See, this is the thing about Rhea Ripley that I'm not in love with. Rhea Ripley's mannerisms, her entrance, her facial expressions, everything is not, it's not a face. It just isn't. And you have to say, oh, look, here she is when she was 9 and she wanted to do this. And then you had to do that to get sympathy for her, because there's no sympathy on her side. If there's any sympathy on anybody's side, it's Charlotte. And I don't get the build up for this either. I don't. If you admired Charlotte Flair your whole life growing up, why'd you get in the ring and punch her in the face? You know, I mean, if you're a Rhea Ripley and you want the sympathy of the crowd, and I know she was told to do it, I'm not saying she did it on her own, but what I'm saying is, wouldn't you as a writer say, couldn't you get Rhea Ripley in here, say, Charlotte, I never said I wanted to be you. I said I wanted to be like you. I said I wanted to one day know what it was like to be like Charlotte Flair, to be able to, you know, go to WrestleMania, to be able to win the belts, to be able to do the things you did. And honestly, I grew up admiring you, but you're not doing anything to help that, Charlotte. Something, you know, they say sometimes you shouldn't meet your heroes. And I think this was the problem with me, Charlotte, is I finally met you. And I realized that the person I idolized is bitch. That works. Because then you say, well, I feel sorry for Rhea Ripley. She met someone she really admired and found out she's not a nice person. And, you know, I get that. No. Rhea Ripley, oh, you ain't nothing. Well, that's a heel move again. I don't know. I'm invested in the match, but I'm not invested in the build-up, Todd. I just don't think it was a great build-up.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Rhea Ripley last night, what she did to Charlotte Flair, there was like a heel sucker punch into the face. I was like,
right.
That's a heel move.
It is
right
a heel
there.
Move. I don't get it. Oh, we should have said that Kevin Owens was attacked backstage by the whole entire, Monday Night Messiah's crew. We figured that would happen. So, anyway, what do we get next? Oh, Bobby Lashley versus Zack Ryder. Somebody remembered Zack Ryder was on the payroll and said, oh, hey, wait a minute. How much money are we paying that guy? Get him in a match. Where Lana was, who knows? They made some excuse. Oh, I don't think she's not, you know, she's, I don't know what the problem is. Maybe she's afraid of the coronavirus. Anyway, what is this all about? You're wasting time. Bobby Lashley's not involved in WrestleMania, and you're trying to do a build-up for WrestleMania. Why don't you give somebody involved in WrestleMania this time? This is just filler. Give them the 4 or 5 minutes. Give somebody who you're going to actually promote a match on the 4 or 5 minutes, because it's not going to be Lashley and it's not going to be Zack Ryder. They're lucky to be in the Battle Royal. So Lashley squashes him in 2 minutes, even with Kurt Hawkins at ringside. Well, and we needed to see this again. Why? To just remind us that Zack Ryder's on the payroll and that Bobby Lashley is too? Nothing to even talk about here. I'm not even going to talk about it because it aggravated me. You could have given that time to another wrestler who actually had a match at WrestleMania that mattered. Speaking of people who no longer matter, Eric Rowan comes along. He's going to fight Drew McIntyre. We had Paul Heyman give the whole speech about how Brock Lesnar is invincible, except it doesn't really sound that great because he got his ass kicked last week. And what should happen? Eric Rowan, who you have built up for months and months, not only drops twice to Aleister Black, but now he drops in like 3 or 4 minutes to Drew McIntyre, and Drew McIntyre destroys the cage. So I guess you've ended that gimmick. Thank you so much for putting us through months of a gimmick just to end it because you couldn't think of anything good to do with it. And what you did do with it ended up being so silly that even you said, oh, my God, I'm embarrassed. Let's just end this. That's called poor writing. That's called ridiculous writing. And I'll tell you what else it's called. It's called isolating your fan base, because who's going to invest their time and effort into another angle when we think, oh, you may just kill it off with nothing? There were people who were genuinely interested in what was in that cage and what it was going to lead to for Eric Rowan. And the best you could come up with is a mechanical spider, and it was so bad and looked so ridiculous that you had to have it squashed by Drew McIntyre, who, by the way, that's a heel move. Does anybody understand that if it doesn't matter that people may not like Eric Rowan, it's not what's in the cage's fault. So to kill whatever's in that cage is a heel move because Eric Rowan loved it. So how does that help Drew McIntyre? These are the ridiculous writing foils that the WWE falls into all the time. All the time. This didn't help Drew McIntyre, and I'll tell you why it didn't help him. Because Eric Rowan's already been beaten twice by Aleister Black and a couple of other people, so no one in the world is thinking, oh, well, that's a... If Drew McIntyre can get by Eric Rowan, he certainly can maybe get by Brock Lesnar. No. You already blew that when you let Aleister Black beat him twice. If this was the first loss Eric Rowan suffered, yeah. Maybe that would have helped Drew McIntyre's push to WrestleMania. It wasn't. So I don't get it. I don't get how that's a great idea. And I don't get how McIntyre squashing whatever it is in the cage makes him a hero and a stand-up guy. I just don't get this, Mike.
I don't get it either. To tell you the truth, you might as well cut him loose, you know, if you're the WWE. I know they don't want him because he's a guy that probably would end up going to AEW and hooking up with his buddy again. But cut him loose. Or this gimmick has run its course. Cut him loose or find a way to get him back with Bray Wyatt.
Yep. Anyway, the Kabuki Warriors come out and just scream in Japanese for 5 minutes. The best line of the night comes from Jerry Lawler, who, when I believe one of the other announcers said, my ears hurt. Jerry Lawler says, mine are bleeding. I don't know why they had him do this. I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense. I know you made Asuka look ridiculously stupid, and now you're going to have to try to compensate, but this isn't the way to do it. You're always pulling yourself out of a hole that you created. That's the problem with the WWE. You create a hole, bury yourself in it, and then say, how do we get out of the hole? How about you don't create it to begin with? That's the best way. So Natty comes down with Liv Morgan. Why they're a tag team, I don't know. And it's no time at all before Ruby Riott comes out, and then Sarah Logan comes out, and we see the writing on the walls. We're going to get a three-way dance probably at WrestleMania between the Riott Squad. I'm okay with that. But again, you haven't built up anybody to really be solid enough to say, oh, well, I'm rooting for this one, or I'm rooting for that one, or this is going to be a great match. It looks like the battle of the who's the least of Jabron. That's the problem. So this didn't really endear me to any of them. I mean, it was good to see them used, Todd, but again, it's just going to be like the battle of who's the least Jabron.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's with Liv Morgan and Natty there and Sarah Logan and all and everybody else in that little shuffle from Elimination Chamber from the other night. They got nothing else for them to do. Just put them together.
That's exactly what it is, Mike. And again, it's good to see them all used, but if you were going to use them, could you at least have each one of them get a couple of wins over somebody or something, so it looks like, well, this is important and not like it's a battle to decide who's the best of the least.
Right, and the best thing that could come out of this is, one, they all get back together, and two, they give Liv Morgan her old gimmick back, and they move on from this, whatever they're trying to do with Liv Morgan.
Yeah, let's hope that happens. I don't have no confidence in the WWE after last night, none whatsoever, because this Eric Rowan thing really left me bummed, only because you invested a lot of time in this and it was for nothing. It turns out it was for absolutely nothing, and that bothers me. Okay, so what do we get here? Cedric Alexander takes on Riddick Moss. Poor Cedric Alexander. By the way, I found out it wasn't supposed to be Ricochet last week who lost to Riddick Moss. It was supposed to be R-Truth, and Vince McMahon purposely changed it to Ricochet. You didn't see Ricochet this week. Ricochet's career is on stall. Not much to talk about here because it was a two-minute match. AJ Styles comes out and gets real personal about The Undertaker, trying anything he can do to sell this match, because at the end of the day, this match isn't a good one. We're not seeing The Undertaker in his prime versus AJ Styles in his prime. And here's the problem I had with this. Samoa Joe and AJ Styles was feuding. If you remember my conversations on this radio show, I said the WWE often jumps the shark. When Samoa Joe went to AJ Styles' house in a menacing way to his wife and kids, I said AJ Styles has to win. Because if he doesn't win, what you're saying is he's not even man enough to defend his family. So now you've given away who's going to win, because there's no earthly way Samoa Joe will win this because he jumped the shark. He went too far. And what do you have AJ Styles do? The exact same thing. He went too far. So now AJ Styles is not going to win this. And the reason he's not going to win it is because he said the Undertaker's a tired old man named Mark Calloway, who long ago was no longer relevant, and his wife is keeping him in the business because she wants the glory and the fame and the money. That went too far. The minute he said that, I said, okay, AJ's losing. So there goes all of the suspense for that match. Instead of AJ Styles, instead of the writers being smart enough to say, AJ, just go out there and say this. I don't know what the Undertaker's problem is with me. I've never had anything but respect for The Undertaker. I've never had any problems with The Undertaker, but if he's going to keep interfering in my matches, you obviously have a problem with me. So here's the deal. I'm calling you out at WrestleMania. It's going to be the phenomenal AJ Styles against the phenom The Undertaker. That's all, because then we would have said, well, I don't know who's going to win. Now we know who's going to win, because you had to take it too far. You had to take it too far. So, not thrilled with it. I thought that, again, Mike, it's just a case of jumping the shark in the WWE, and they do it all the time.
Yeah, and they do it all the time. And here's the deal. We got two guys, one who doesn't show up once or twice a year, and one who wants to start winding down his career, you know?
Yeah.
That's what we have here.
And it's not a good enough push, and I'll tell you why, because it doesn't really make any sense. Why did The Undertaker show up? Why did The Undertaker show up in Saudi Arabia and cost AJ Styles the trophy? Why did he show up for Aleister Black? There is no reason. Yes, AJ Styles is cheating. I get it. And The Undertaker's all, well, I'm not going to put up with that cheating. But at the end of the day, yeah, it wasn't The Undertaker's business. AJ Styles is right about it. You never let the bad guy be right about it. If you were going to do this, you should have had him, AJ Styles, be running down The Undertaker about stuff long before The Undertaker showed up. I don't know. I mean, it left me cold, and it's a shame. I'm a huge AJ Styles fan. I'm just not looking forward to this match because I know exactly what's going to happen now, and so does anybody with a, you know, clear brain cell, because they've jumped the shark on it. There's only so many things you can say. You know, you can say I'm better than you, and maybe you're not going to win. You can say I'm, or you are going to win. There's things you can say, and it's still okay. You can't start bringing in a man's wife and family because then they're going to let him win. They're going to let him win. So, unfortunately, I think, you know, maybe they'll surprise me, but I don't think so. We then had Seth Rollins go into Aleister Black's dark room and ask him if he wanted to join him. I don't know why. I'm going to be very honest with you, and I know it's going to upset a lot of people. I was one of the people who said, bring Aleister Black up immediately. Bring him up immediately. Bring him up immediately. He needs to get up here. I'm already tired of him. I'm already tired of him. I don't think it's much of a character. I don't think it's much of a gimmick. I don't think he's pulling it off particularly well. I don't think he looks like a star. I think it's going to get old quick. I think Vince is going to give up on it in about a month or two. Unless something changes. Unless something major changes. I mean, if he went with Seth Rollins, that would help. But this is getting old. And I don't see huge reaction in his matches. I just don't. So he says, no, I don't want to join. So they decide they're going to fight later on. Him and Seth Rollins for the very first time. Because it's not worth saving for a pay-per-view. We'll just do it on Raw. You know, it's an okay segment, whatever, you know, not thrilled with it. Speaking of not thrilled with it, we kept all night long hearing Edge is here, going to be here, Edge is going to be here. And what do? They put MVP in the ring saying, you know, man, you want to talk about a guy who no longer has it? It's him. You know, as I make my transition from the ring to behind the scenes, I think I'm going to start a stable. Well, God help us all. What happened to him being good on the mic? And I think I'd start with a guy like Edge. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. A guy who is just barely coming back from an injury that could be totally disabling and probably, and it's almost 50 and has a year left on his career. That's a brilliant idea, MVP. That's who I'd start with too. That's just embarrassingly bad. That's just embarrassingly bad. But they needed somebody for Edge to beat up because it wasn't going to be Randy Orton. And I knew that. The minute they started this, I said, Randy Orton's not getting touched tonight. Not touched. If he is, just barely, which is exactly what happened. MVP took the brunt of it all. Edge had very little to say. Randy Orton had very little to say. It was really a disappointment. The buildup was fantastic. It deserved better than this. The conclusion, the payoff deserved to be better than this. This was a very weak payoff, and throwing MVP in as the punching bag was a lousy idea. Number one, he didn't say anything that bad that would make Edge try to cripple him. So that doesn't make Edge look all that great either. It's like, well, you know, come on. The guy said a few nasty things. He didn't, you know, you're going to cripple him over it? Oh, but I was just so mad. I said, this is Randy Orton. Well, who cares what you said? Why don't you run out and get Randy Orton? Here's the thing that was dumb. Randy Orton standing there, he doesn't run. When Randy Orton leaves, then he says, maybe I'll run after him. Oh, maybe you should have ran after him when he was right in the middle of the rampway, eh? You had all the ample opportunity in the world to run after him. Instead, you decided to beat up MVP. And then, oh, well, wait a minute. He's leaving. I better run after him. Dumb. And then Charlie Caruso's backstage saying, Edge, can we get a word with you? He says, where is, or I mean, I don't know if it's Charlie. I don't know who the hell it was. I forget. Where is Randy Orton? I don't want to be the one to tell you, but he left the building. And he just bugs his eyes out of his head. I never thought he might leave the building. Really? Where'd you think he was going? Catering? And then Charlie, she asked no more questions. So why'd you stop him for? Well, that's just a terrible segment. A terrible segment. That did absolutely nobody any good. Because it looked phony and it looked dumb and it looked contrived, Mike.
And yeah, and once she said he left the building, what he should have done was head to the nearest exit, got in his car, and the chase is on, you know?
Right. Why didn't he chase him when he was standing on the rampway instead of beating up MVP, Mike?
Who knows?
Right. Why does Charlie Caruso ask not another question? Why should she stop him if there's no questions to ask? Excuse me, Edge, I'd just like to talk to you for a minute. Where's Randy Orton? Oh, I'm sorry, he left the building. Okay, no further questions. Well, what? Terrible. I'm sorry, that's terrible. Just terrible. What should have happened was Edge should have got his hands on Randy Orton, and Orton should have just avoided being concertoed, you know, between a chair and ran, and Edge right after him with security trying to stop Edge from murdering Randy Orton. They don't throw MVP in there. Why the hell is MVP in there? Aleister Black takes on Seth Rollins. You're doing a really, really good job of making Seth Rollins look like he is a preliminary wrestler. He never wins on his own. He can't beat Montez Ford. This is a guy who beat Brock Lesnar 2-3 times. Can't beat anybody now. He can't beat anybody. And yet he says he's better. I'm a better man now than I ever was, really? Well, I don't know. The man you was before beat Brock Lesnar 3 times. The man you are now can't beat Montez Ford or Aleister Black or really anybody. Or Kevin Owens or nobody. You've destroyed that angle. Just destroyed it. When it looks like Aleister Black is going to win, Buddy Murphy jumps in. Everybody jumps Aleister Black. And then here comes the Viking Raiders again. Because everybody wants to see that feud, right? Then here comes the Street Profits. And they decide, let's have an 8-man tag team match. I don't know what to say. I really don't know what to say. It doesn't feel like this was a WrestleMania build-up show at all. You started with a couple of segments with Becky Lynch and obviously Charlotte Flair. But then you just kind of faded away. And you're just like, oh, no, WrestleMania's a year away. We got plenty of time. No, you don't. You got 3 weeks. You got 3 weeks, and you're building up next to nothing. You're too busy farting around with Bobby Lashley and Zack Ryder. And Rey Mysterio and Angel Garza to even be concerned. Oh, who cares? We got plenty. We got our main events. That's all anybody cares about. We don't have to work on our secondary matches. We don't have to give them guys any time. It really looks like it's random. It looks like they show up at Monday Night Raw and say, look, we know we got to do this, that, and this with our top people. As far as the people who aren't our top people, you, what are you doing tonight? Nothing. You fight him. You win. That's it. We didn't have it planned or nothing, but you're here. We haven't used you in a while. You go out and do something. That's what it really feels like to me. And this is 3 weeks removed from WrestleMania. Or till WrestleMania, I should say. We should have left last night saying, oh man, WrestleMania is going to be so good. I just can't wait to see. No, we just were like, okay, well. We saw a lot of stuff that doesn't even have any reference to WrestleMania. At all. And for that reason, I can't give this high grades. Number one, you never should have had Angel Garza lose to Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio does not need a victory. Rey Mysterio is a legend who's well past his prime, and his main role in the WWE should be to put over younger talent, not put them down. Bobby Lashley and Zack Ryder never should have happened. It's meaningless. It's if you really wanted to have a match, you should have had a match between Sarah Logan and Liv Morgan, and then Ruby Riott comes down and you're wondering who the hell that's going to, you know, affect one way or the other, and then they both attack her and each other. The Kabuki Warriors out of it, screaming for... Here's the thing. They screamed for 4 or 5 minutes. You couldn't have gave that 5 minutes to somebody else? We didn't need to see Drew McIntyre destroy Eric Rowan because it did no good for Drew McIntyre's build, and it destroyed Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan's now right back to where he started before he started talking to something in a cage, which is a preliminary bump. We gave you your, you know, month and a half of TV time, and we let you squash two guys at once and let you squash a whole bunch of people, and now you can't beat anybody. In a minute, you're just done. You're a jabron. Then why should we invest any more when the WWE gives us a storyline? Why should we as fans spend our time investing in it saying, I wonder where this is going to lead? We were speculating what's going to happen with Eric Rowan. What is in that cage? It's probably not alive, really. It's probably something he thinks is alive, but it isn't. Maybe it's invisible. Maybe it's just something, you know, that he can't see or you can't see, but he can, like R-Truth and Little Jimmy. Remember that? And maybe we even speculated maybe him and R-Truth are going to get together because of this in some way. There were so many ways you could have went with this. And what you went with is a giant mechanical spider that gets crushed the next week after you reveal it because you realize this is a horrible, horrible, stupid gimmick that everyone laughed at on the social media. And instead of yelling at your writers and saying it's not Eric Rowan's fault, God damn it, we wanted to promote him and you freaking blew it. No, then that's okay. Bury Eric Rowan. He couldn't get a giant mechanical spider over that dumb son of a bitch. I don't know what to say, Mike. It gets aggravating after a while.
I got to give it a D. And here's something else to think about. I was going to mention this earlier, but I'm mentioning it right now with Selena Vega. Before last night, before they had Rey Jr., Rey Mysterio beat him, I'm thinking, you know, yesterday afternoon, I'm thinking, look, what have we been saying about Paul Heyman? He needs another person. He basically needs to start a stable. All right, we basically agree that at some point they're going to flip Andrade, you know. But until they decide to do that, and what you could have had was the beginnings of a stable for Selena Vega, making her look extremely strong as her, quote, business manager thing, you know. I mean,
right.
That's what they could have done here.
Yeah, or they could have not wasted the opportunity and said, look, Andrade's going to come down with Angel Garza. And then maybe Humberto Carrillo comes down to help Rey Mysterio. And the next thing you know, it's, oh, God, here they are. It's a battle again because these guys hate each other. And then nothing's really resolved. But, hey, there's a good buildup. Or... in the middle of the skirmish, in the middle of, you know, the referee trying to maintain order, maybe accidentally Andrade hits Angel Garza. And Garza gets rolled up for the three count. And Garza's, you know, Andrade's, oh, oops. You know, and Selena Vega's trying to say, well, you know, it was a mistake. But, you know, they're making eyes at each other like, hey, you cost me my match. You know, at least give me a branch on a tree. Give me something. No, they bring in Angel Garza and he cripples Rey Mysterio. They bring in Angel Garza and he keeps beating Humberto. And the idea is, man, this Angel Garza is something. He's a force to be reckoned with. And then, no, let's just have 50-year-old Rey Mysterio come out and beat him clean. See, the WWE never, they don't play chess. They don't think that their last move matters. It's like, okay, Angel Garza lost to Rey Mysterio, but tomorrow or next week, Angel Garza could beat Seth Rollins. And they'd say, well, who cares? Well, what's the difference? Well, the difference is it doesn't make sense. Just like Seth Rollins is so good he can beat Brock Lesnar, but he can't beat Montez Ford. It doesn't make sense. I don't know why we have to have this all the time. This is why it's aggravating to be a WWE fan, because it doesn't make sense. There has to be a logical progression where you say a guy comes in, he makes a good name for himself. He a little bit like Aleister Black. You brought in Aleister Black wrong in the tag team, but when you brought him in as a solo, he was making a name for himself. He was basically undefeated. I wouldn't have had him suffer that first loss like he did with AJ Styles, but everyone realized that's ridiculously unfair. So it's not like he suffered from it. Well, what would have happened if he just lost to Carl Anderson? Oh, I just couldn't beat Carl Anderson. They interfered, but I couldn't beat him. Then you're going to be thrilled about him fighting Seth Rollins? Your first move matters. It matters. WWE don't think it matters. The guy who beat a star last week could lose to a preliminary guy next week. And it's all over the place. And that's why people are just like, I don't know. I don't know who you want me to think is the really strong guys here and who you want me to think are the weak ones. I don't know. Anyway, this didn't feel like anything that really furthered WrestleMania other than the confrontations. Of course, you're going to see Edge against Orton. I hated that. I hated this. I know a lot of people liked it. I hated it. You had to have him. You had to have a pull-apart fight there. You had to. You had to keep MVP out of it and have a pull-apart fight with police and everybody involved. That would have been cool. Nope. Let's try to get over Montez. Not Montez. Well, let's try to get over MVP. Let's try to get over MVP. Why? Why is he in the ring? Reminds me of Liv Morgan. Why is she in the ring? Why do you have to pull the, I had a lesbian affair with Lana thing just to totally destroy her career? You always have to go too far. Just have Randy Orton come out with security. Edge trying to get through to security. He can't. You don't have to have MVP in there. And I think I'll start a stable with a 50-year-old wrestler who has a bad neck and may not be able to wrestle much. Yeah, that's a really good idea. That's smart. I was bored through most of Raw. I've lost total interest in the Monday Night Messiah gimmick. I've lost total interest in it because Seth Rollins does not feel like an actual threat to anybody. That's the problem. He and his stable do not feel like a threat to anyone. And the people they are threatening, the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits, I don't care about. Kevin Owens, yes, but Kevin Owens isn't feeling like Kevin Owens either. I don't care about Aleister Black. He's trying way, 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 way too hard to be badass for his own good. He reminds me of the little guy in a bar fight. Oh, I'm the toughest guy here. Okay? I've had enough of him, too. Nobody feels like I want to root for them. That's the problem. I don't have anybody to root for on Raw. Drew McIntyre. I like Drew McIntyre. Aside from that, I have nobody to root for. You've ruined Kevin Owens. So who's the guys I'm supposed to be rooting for again? Ridiculous. I'm giving it a D as well because I don't see anything on here that helped me to say I can't wait for WrestleMania. As a matter of fact, my thought during this whole entire thing was, man, is this going to be a long, drawn-out event, this WrestleMania? They're going to have so many of these matches that I don't care about that by the time they get to the ones I do care about, I'm going to be wrestled out. That's my thought, and that should never be the thought. Todd, what's your rating?
I got to go with you guys. I got to go with a D as well.
So it almost failed. Anyway, I got a couple of comments from some fans who listened to the show that wanted me to address their thought. And their thought was that they thought the cage at the Elimination Chamber thing with Shayna Baszler was actually pretty good. And they said, well, what did you want them to do, Marcus? They got Shayna Baszler. We all knew she was going to win. If you made her look less than dominant, it would have been worse. Because then you would have said, well, you didn't even make her look tough. She almost lost to Ruby Riott. She almost lost to Asuka. She almost lost to Liv Morgan. How, you know, how are we supposed to believe she's going to beat Becky Lynch? No, you're missing my point. I knew Shayna Baszler was going to win too, and I'm not against Shayna Baszler winning. What I said I was against was her destroying people in such a short period of time that they had to just stand there and wait for the next pod to open for a minute and a half while the fans booed everybody out of the building because it undermined the entire women's division. You didn't have to do that. You didn't have to do that at all. I told you what you could have done. You could have had Natalya start the match with Ruby Riott. And you could have had Sarah Logan in next. And Sarah Logan and Ruby Riott reluctantly form a team trying to get Natty out. And then here comes Liv Morgan. And when it looks like Liv Morgan is going to come to Natty's aid, the Riott squad reforms for a while and they beat the hell out of Natty. Eliminate her. Start fighting each other a little bit, and then out of the cage would come Asuka out of the pod. And they'd reform again and beat the hell out of her. Not eliminate her, just beat the hell out of her. And then go back to beating on each other. Then out comes Shayna Baszler and takes out each member of the Riott squad because they're already been beaten up by each other anyway. And Asuka, who something horrible has happened to and probably suffered an injury, she just picks the bones of. And then says, I beat arguably the toughest woman in the in the division that Becky Lynch couldn't even come close to beating for 3 years. I beat her within minutes. She never even gave me any trouble. And the fans could have said, yeah, because she was injured. You wouldn't have done it if she wasn't. See, that's what a heel does. And then she would have got real heat because people would have said, that's not true. Asuka had already been thrown through a pod and they did all kinds of horrible things to her and her hand was damn near broke and everything else by the time Shayna Baszler got in there. Shayna Baszler just picked the bones. And now she's acting like she beat Asuka with no problem. That's what a heel does. And then it wouldn't have sacrificed Asuka. It wouldn't even sacrifice Natty because you would have said it took the whole Riott squad to beat Natty. And then they were so obsessed with beating each other up that they actually hurt their own chances of winning. If they had just stayed together, they might all three of them might have been able to take out Shayna Baszler, but no, they couldn't even do that because they hate each other. When they thought the biggest threat was out there, then all of a sudden it was too late. There were ways you could have booked this to make everybody still look reasonably strong. Instead, you made your entire women's division look like jabrones. One woman look superhuman, and the only people you care about in the women's division is Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch, and Shayna Baszler, and that is it. So don't get me wrong. I know Shayna Baszler had to win. I just booked her to win. But I booked her to win in a way that didn't make the entire women's division look like garbage and still made Shayna Baszler look plenty tough and also look like a heel. She was able to take out the entire Riott squad, and she picked the bones of Asuka. And then claimed it was a legit victory when everybody knows it wasn't. That helps her heel persona. That helps down the road. You might want Shayna Baszler versus Asuka, right? At some point down the road, you may want it. Why should fans want to see it now? We've seen it. It was garbage. She beat her in no time. Convince me now how, Asuka can stand up to Shayna Baszler. Well, why? She couldn't do it then. This way, she would have been able to. This way, The announcers could have said, look, Shayna Baszler can say what she wants. We saw what happened to Asuka. Asuka wasn't 50%. Asuka wasn't even 25% by the time she got in that cage. And Shayna Baszler did nothing but pick the bones. Yes, she did look impressive. Yes, she did run through the Riott squad. Yes, she is a machine. But if you're telling me that she beat Asuka with no problem at all, and she thinks Asuka was at full strength, she's dreaming. That way you saved the match for later. And you still had the same result. Shayna Baszler would have got booed a lot more when she picked Asuka up, who was clearly, we could have made her look like she was clearly in agony Referee's down there looking at her, asking her if she's all right, and Shayna Baszler brushes the referee off, picks Asuka up by the hair, and says, eh, doesn't matter. She's going to be out of here soon enough anyway. Maul her for a little bit with Asuka trying to fight back but can't because she's damn near finished anyway, and then made the Riot Squad look pretty tough if they're a gang. But they can't get it together, which teases, can they get it together at some point? Will they get back together? They did it in the cage for a little while, but then they start fighting each other. So they still hate each other, but reluctantly, once in a while, they might, if they need to. That's kind of a branch on a tree. Asuka wanting some revenge on Shayna Baszler, saying I wasn't 100%, that's a branch on a tree. And we left this cage with some branches on trees. We left this cage with no branches on any trees, Mike. It was ridiculous. I don't think we got Mike there, so let's go to Todd. Todd, if that had went that way, I think you would have had a much better reaction to the Elimination Chamber.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, my problem with that match, it was just like nothing but squashes. Like nothing. Like they're not giving any of the other participants a little offense or anything. All it was is tap out submissions or from Shayna Baszler with her little sleep.
Yeah, all you had to do was have the Riot Squad left in the ring fighting each other when Shayna Baszler got in. Asuka hurt. Laying on the outside with a referee, on the outside of the ring next to the cage with a referee checking her. Instantly, Shayna Baszler grabs Liv Morgan or Sarah Logan and just takes her out quick. Then the other two Riot Squad are, she dispatches one, throws one over the top rope or whatever, fights one for a minute and taps her out. And then you got the maybe Ruby Riott fighting her for, you know, a minute before she taps her out. And then everybody realizes the only person left is Asuka. And Shayna Baszler just walks around like, what now? You know, kicks at Asuka a couple times, like, get up. You know, even if she says to her, get up, come on. You're supposed to be the toughest woman, lady in this match. Get up. Referee saying, come on, Shayna, come on. She may be hurt. Leave her alone. Shayna Baszler picks her up, beats the hell out of her, taps her out, or makes her pass out. Tell me that's not a branch on a tree, because now you can have the announcers say, well, congratulations to Shayna Baszler. Asuka was mugged by the entire Riot Squad. She was being attended to by a referee who, as a possible injury, a possible serious injury, and Shayna Baszler picks the bones and then claims she beat the toughest woman in WWE. That's some real good thinking by Shayna Baszler. You've saved Asuka and you've saved the match. And it still makes Baszler look like a bitch. It makes Baszler look tough. She took out the whole Riot Squad. But you've saved that moment. WWE just doesn't do that, Mike. I mean, they just don't think that far ahead.
They don't think that far ahead. And here's something else that it would have done. At any given time, you want to flip Asuka, your scenario would have been a perfect way to flip her. You know?
Absolutely.
Think about it. Think about it. She's hurt, and all this other person comes in there and is picked the bones, and, well, the fans can see through what Baszler says because, Asuka's sitting there hurt and holding her hand, doing all this. She got beat up by these other three girls. And you're claiming you beat her fair and square?
Right. Then Becky Lynch could have got on here last night and said, Shayna, you need to get over yourself. Yeah, you're right. It took me 3 years to beat Asuka, but guess what? I did it clean, and I did it without the Riot Squad beating her down for 20 minutes. Okay? I did it on my own. If you think you did it on your own, you're dreaming. And you're not going to have that help at WrestleMania when you're fighting me. So don't pat yourself too hard on the back, honey, because you know deep down in your heart you didn't do that. That would have been much more interesting because fans would have said she's absolutely correct. She's absolutely correct, and Baszler's taking credit for something she didn't do, which is a heel move. They always let the heel be right. I just don't understand that, Mike. And then they throw away the possible match of Asuka and Baszler because at this point we don't want to see it. And you know what they'll do, Mike? They'll still, we'll still have it. And Asuka will still come very close to winning. Well, why? Why should we think she has a chance when she had zero chance in the cage after Baszler had already went through four women?
Right. And think about this. Acting like a letting the heels be right is something they've done ever since they kind of let Sasha walk away and take a ball and go home. Remember that? Remember what Sasha was saying?
Yeah.
And she was right for saying it, you know? And she was being a heel at the time, but she was right for what she was saying. So yeah,
yes.
You know, this has been the modus operandi for the WWE for a long time.
I agree. It has been, and it's getting old. It's getting really aggravating, and that's why fans are booing. Some fans don't even realize why they're aggravated, but that is why, because they don't get any branches on trees. Everything is clear cut. And take out as many people on the way to the next storyline as you can. Undermine as many people as you can. Why? Why don't you try to save as many people as you can so you get more interesting matchups? That's what I don't get. By the way, we should say that I found an interesting piece of information. Apparently, the WWE did, in fact, approach Bayley and Sasha to do a WrestleMania match together. We were right. That's where they were heading with this thing, Bayley and Sasha, and then that they were going to clash at WrestleMania. And Bayley and Sasha said they would rather wait and have it be in a non-WrestleMania match because, rightfully too, they felt we will not get the time. We'll get 6 minutes. There's going to be 15 matches at WrestleMania. We'll get 6 minutes. 6 minutes is not enough for us to do what we need to do if we're going to have this match. We need 20 minutes. We're not going to get 20 minutes at WrestleMania. So they basically said, are we going to get 20 minutes? And then, no, of course you're not going to get 20 minutes. Okay, well then let's wait. Let's do it at a different pay-per-view where you will give us 20 minutes. So my hat's off to them, really, because, see, they're thinking they don't want to wrestle 20 minutes. Look, there's a lot of people who say, like Goldberg, oh, if I can wrestle 1 minute, that's great. More money for me, less time in the ring. Same way with Brock Lesnar. So when a wrestler actually says, no, I don't think the fans will like it unless we can do what we really can do, and we need 20 minutes, and we're willing to work hard in that 20 minutes, give my hats off to both of you. Because you're absolutely correct. Fans do want to see that be a 20-minute match and not a 6-minute bullshit. So congrats if you really stood up to the powers that be and said, no, we're not going to do it until you give us 20 minutes so we can do it right. I 100% agree with you, and I wish more people would do that. So, Mike, that's an interesting piece of information.
Right, and look, that also gives them time to, if they're going to split them up, you know, if they're going to put some kinks in their friendship, you know, maybe flip Bayley, maybe flip Sasha, I don't know, whatever they're going to do. That gives them time to do whatever they're going to do with these two people to make us want that match even more.
Right, and it'll probably start at WrestleMania because I'm hearing there's going to be some kind of a multi-woman match for Bayley's title in which Sasha is in it. So with all these women in it, there's no question about the fact that at some point Bayley and Sasha will get a minute or two probably to fight each other and put that branch on the tree. So congratulations to both of them. If they really did this, and this is what I'm hearing, if they really said no to a WrestleMania match, which a lot of people won't say no to that, because they felt that it would cheat the fans out of seeing what they really wanted to do in that ring. Great. Great. I wish more people had that integrity to do that. Because they happen to be absolutely correct. So, folks, I got to tell you, I was a little disappointed last night in Raw. I think they're undermining a lot of their characters. I'm running right down these characters, and I'm saying Buddy Murphy, who I was really excited for, and I thought he had a bright future. He's, you know, second banana to Seth Rollins, who's a mid-carder at this point. So, no, I'm not excited about Buddy Murphy. I just said Seth Rollins is losing to everybody. His whole Monday Night Messiah thing is crumbling. Nobody cares about it because the people he's feuding against, the Viking Raiders, are not over. And Kevin Owens has lost his entire charisma based upon the way they're dealing with him. And Samoa Joe, I guess, failed a test or something. He's out. Forget Samoa Joe. So there's all that. You buried Ricochet. Aleister Black is not rootable. He's just one step off being a heel. You buried Eric Rowan, who the Street Profits are not my cup of tea. You know, I don't know. I'm just not into them. So who is it I'm supposed to be rooting for on Monday Night Raw? Who's the people? You know, Drew McIntyre I like. Okay. I'm very invested in Andrade and Angel Garza, but you're not doing a whole lot with them either. So I'm sorry to tell you that your roster's failing on Raw. Your roster's failing badly. At least over on SmackDown, there are people I legitimately say, oh, good, you know, I'm happy to see this person in the ring and this person in the ring, and this will be interesting. AJ Styles, you've ruined. You're about, you know, he's going to lose to The Undertaker at WrestleMania. I don't know what AJ Styles is going to do from here on out. I was hoping, God, I was hoping, that Aleister Black was going to come to his senses and say, you know what, maybe I will take up Seth Rollins' offer, because you know what that would have meant? That would have meant that Seth Rollins, Buddy Murphy, and Aleister Black were going to be taking on the OC. It probably would have flipped the OC, and that would have been damn good. That would have been a damn good feud. But no, of course not. Can't do that. So we'll get more Aleister Black, Buddy Murphy. We'll get an Aleister Black, Seth Rollins. I think you better find out. You know, if you're Kevin Owens, you're saying, wait a minute, is Seth Rollins not my ultimate enemy here? Am I not supposed to be the guy who, because if you're going to give him to Aleister Black, where do I fit in? All this time I'm battling Seth Rollins, and now you've kind of swerved it and said, forget Kevin Owens. You just get beat up by him. We're going to start you on a feud with Aleister Black. Gee, thanks. I'm sure that's great for Kevin Owens to know, or maybe they'll throw him in there in place of Samoa Joe. And that's what you want, right? Aleister Black, who said, I would rather do things alone, but I'll be in a team. Because that makes so much sense, right? I don't know, folks. Raw's losing my interest fast. It would be very, very difficult for Raw to gain back my interest at this point, because I've lost interest in almost all their characters. I saw Buddy Murphy as an up-and-coming star that I said, I'm really interested in seeing what he can do. You've just made him a third banana. He's, forget it. Garza, I said, this guy is going to be the future. And Andrade, too, both of them guys, I said, man, you know, they're going to make a big run. They're going to be big. They're going to languish in that, you know, U.S. title, intercontinental title, depending on which brand they end up being on. That's what they'll be, a secondary title type contender. That's it. That's all they're going to do with him. Seth Rollins and this Monday Night Messiah thing's going nowhere. It's just taking up airtime because nobody even boos them anymore. Nobody cares one way or the other. You've destroyed that. Kevin Owens has been nullified as just a knucklehead who tries hard but can't get it done. There's nobody to root for. The one guy you've handled right, Drew McIntyre. And here's the thing that gets me. The guy you handled right, Drew McIntyre, gets handled right because Brock Lesnar decides to play ball. If Brock Lesnar had said, I ain't doing that, that wouldn't have happened. Wouldn't have happened. You'd have handled it the same way you handled everything. Brock Lesnar would show up, F5 Drew McIntyre two or three times, and on their way to WrestleMania to fight. That's it. This time, Brock Lesnar agreed to, you know what? No, let him get over on me. Let's push this character to make it look like, you know, this is going to be a tough one for me. The OC, Anderson and Gallows can't beat anybody. This thing with, we're the greatest tag team in the world, but we never ever have a tag team match. We just double team a single guy who beats us both. Has gotten to the point where it's silly and laughable now. To call them, you might as well have Hawkins and Ryder call themselves the best tag team in the world. They don't lose any more or less. So the OC's a joke. When they first reformed, I said, man, they're going to run wild on this Monday Night Raw. They're going to be the, you know, the driving force. Nah, it's Jabron Central. And it feels like Jabron Central. None of these things worked, Mike, and it's left the Monday Night Raw audience with very little to root for.
Right, and we talk about, on Fridays, we talk about the ratings between you know, AEW and NXT and stuff, yeah, they don't care. But here's the deal with ratings. We're looking at ratings for Raw, you know. The more they do this type of stuff, you talk about ratings for Raw being somewhere in the mid-2 millions, right? So
yeah.
The more they do this type of stuff, the more they make people not care about their characters and do this stuff and poor writing and all this stuff. There's got to come a lot of demarcation where that 2.5 million rating that they get, that they consistently get, average, you know, rating that they consistently get is going to start dropping and dropping and dropping, you know. And
I agree.
And then, you know, and what are they going to do then?
I don't know, because I don't see anybody on there that's going to be the driving force. They're going to have to give Drew McIntyre the belt and hope that his draw power is enough to bring it all on together on Raw, but I don't think it is. They're putting all their eggs in the basket of Becky Lynch and Drew McIntyre, which both of them are good. But you need some very strong supporting characters. We don't have that many. I'm afraid to tell you that the first time Aleister Black loses relatively clean, it's over. You should have built them up totally differently. As far as Buddy Murphy, you should have had this absolutely 100% be that Seth Rollins is always blaming Buddy Murphy. Seth Rollins is always making Buddy Murphy the fall guy. Seth Rollins is always falling back on Buddy Murphy and telling him, well, okay, look, the loss was your fault, but don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You know, you're still green. You still have a lot to learn from the Messiah. The idea would be that eventually Buddy Murphy says, I've had a fucking about enough of this. That's where you're supposed to go with that. No, let's not go with that. Let's have Buddy Murphy in the middle of the ring saying, what should I do now, Seth? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You destroyed Buddy Murphy in the process. Seth Rollins is doing some of his best work. Don't get me wrong. But he's got to win. And if he doesn't win, it's got to be Murphy's fault he doesn't win, or it's because he overworked Murphy or won't get in the ring or whatever it happens to be, or puts Murphy in bad situations all the time. But Rollins himself should be untouched. Rollins himself should have never lost to Montez Ford. I don't care what the situation is. Seth Rollins would not, if I was the booker, Seth Rollins is not getting pinned. I don't care what happens. He could cause a pinfall inadvertently. He could cause a DQ. He's not getting pinned because the gimmick is supposed to be Seth Rollins is the Messiah. He is the guy who is 100% above board here, and he's not the guy who ever loses. That way he always has the thing to fall back on is, I didn't lose. And then if you had Buddy Murphy come to him and say, Seth, I realize I lost the match and I realize I let everybody down, especially you. But I mean, I tried to tag you 3 or 4 times and you weren't there. And Murph, you can't be blaming me. Please tell me you're not blaming me for your shortcomings. That's what you have to get over, Murph. You know, eventually fans would say, when is this guy going to get tired of it? And when he does, you got a really good match. You got a really, really good match. Instead, you have KO eating popcorn and getting beat up by the AOP, which who cares? Instead, you have Montez Ford pinning Seth Rollins so that Seth Rollins doesn't look like he's a world beater at all. And I just don't get it, Mike. I don't get the booking because I think it's just self-destructive to the characterizations.
Right. And going back to your thing with Buddy Murphy, once he gets tired of it, I mean, you would have the fans saying, well, when's he going to get tired of it? When's he going to get tired of it? When's he going to get tired of it? Then when he finally gets tired of it and adds it up to here with him, you flip him and you've got a monster face.
Right. Because you know the fans are going to start cheering for Murphy when he gets in the ring to try to, like, support him, saying, go ahead and turn on them already. You know, Seth gets booed, but Murphy gets cheered when he gets in the ring if they're in a tag team. And then we have that dynamic of Seth maybe getting a little jealous over it and saying, gee, you know, the fans really seem to like you, Murph. Maybe, you know, maybe you should work a little less on worrying about what the masses say and listen a little bit more to what the Messiah has to say, huh? And you wouldn't be losing all the time. Those type of things so that you say, this is coming. This is coming, and we're going to get something good out of Murphy. No, we're not seeing this. And even if they do it now, it doesn't matter because Rollins has been pinned, Mike.
Right, and that's the thing. And you're right. There are very few characters on Raw that we care about. I mean, Becky Lynch and possibly Lesnar / Paul Heyman, and of course the Scottish Terminator there. But other than that, name them. Who is a tag team do we care about? You know. Whereas on SmackDown, we care about just about everybody. I mean, you know, we care about Sami Zayn. We care about to some extent, Nakamura and the others, and we care about their champions. We even care about Bayley and Sasha, you know?
The Monday Night Messiah thing, they should have been running wild. Remember when Seth Rollins said, if you're not with us, you're the enemy, and you have to be disposed of. Well, they should have started that. You know, my first thing I would have done is to say, okay, who don't we use too much? Oh, we don't use Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder much? Okay, I got an idea. How about Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder fight Murphy and Seth, and they try to recruit them before the match, and they say, no, we're not into this. Sorry. And Rollins goes out of his way to purposely injure one of them. Then whichever one you've injured, it's not like you're using them all the time anyway, so he's out for a month. So what? Then you could always have the other one get the sympathy for him by saying, you know, that's my best friend. And to have to sit there and watch my best friend be decimated by Seth Rollins for no other reason than we didn't want to bow down to his ridiculous ideas is disgusting. And somebody's got to do something about this. Then people would say, well, that's fucked up. You know, Zack Ryder's in the, you know, hospital, or Zack Ryder's hurt. Curt Hawkins is saying how, you know, this is his best friend in the world and he didn't do anything wrong. He just tried to be a competitor in a wrestling match. These are the ways you get to there. And you slowly, you know, you have Buddy Murphy, you know, looking like, was that really necessary? So to the point, you start to realize Murphy's seeing a side of Rollins he doesn't like. But Murphy's career was nowhere until Seth Rollins, so he's hanging in there. But he's not going to hang in there forever. That way, each guy you decimate, each guy you do something to, you know it's a matter of time until Murphy says, enough. Enough. And that one guy who says to Murphy, why are you with these guys? They treat you like garbage. Rollins is, you know, nuts as he can possibly be. You're a talented guy and you're wasting your talent. And maybe that's the guy who finally, when Seth Rollins goes to try to finish off, Murphy says no. And then you got a good feud. Yeah, and you got something out of Murphy. This way you got nothing. It writes itself. It is not hard. You just take a look at Seth Rollins and say, he can't be pinned. We're making him the Monday Night Messiah. Messiahs don't get pinned by Montez Ford. If you want this team to lose, fine. Murphy's got to lose. And Seth has got to blame him in a left-handed way, saying, you know, listen. You made mistakes. That's why I'm here for you, though. I'm not mad at you. Yeah, okay, we lost the belts. It's your fault. But I'm not mad at you. Because I knew when I took you in that you had a lot of faults. That's why I took you in. That's the kind of thing. So you always say, oh, Seth always blames somebody else for his losses. Seth never is the one who gets touched. Seth isn't the one who gets beat on. It's always poor Murphy. And eventually, the fans are going to start siding with Murphy, and you're going to get that big push. Mike, I mean, it's a no-brainer, and they can't do it. I just don't get it.
They can't. Yeah, you're right. They can't do it. And think about this. If you didn't want to use Ryder and Falcons, okay, you could have absolutely – you still got a guy in I'm blanking on his name. You know, I got a kid that who every time he shows up, he's popular. He still gets cheers, you know. And can you imagine what he would say, what people would feel if he came out and said Heath Slater, you know. If people would say Heath Slater catches him in the back by himself, you know, maybe he gets to the building a little bit later than the rest of the guys do, and he comes in there by himself. And Heath Slater says, "Well, what are you doing? You know, he's dragging you down. He's dragging you down a bad road. What are you doing? You know?" And he says, "Well, you know, he." He kind of brushes off Heath Slater, but after a while, he comes back to that conversation, and he's thinking out loud, and he says, "What am I doing?" You know.
Well, how about this, Mike? How about we, if we were to write it, how about you do it this way? Several people come up to Buddy Murphy, mostly preliminary guys, and say, "What are you doing?" You know, and those are the guys who Seth Rollins says, "Oh, they're poisoning Buddy Murphy's mind, Buddy. You got to finish him off." And then with Seth's help, you know, Seth gives him the chair or whatever, the AOP holds him, and he finishes him off. Then if you really wanted to get dramatic, how about if you had one of these women who ain't doing anything backstage because their name ain't Becky Lynch or Charlotte Flair or Shayna Baszler, say to Murphy, "You know, I have to agree with him. You had so much potential, and you're throwing it away, letting Seth tell you what to do. He's just a loudmouth." And then if Seth said, "I'm sorry, but she has to be finished off," Buddy Murphy could say, "Oh, no, I'm not going there. I'm not striking a girl with a chair." And you'd have that moment where, is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? And he throws the chair down and says, "No, I'm not doing it." And then the AOP and Seth Rollins attack him, beat the hell out of him, throw him out of the goddamn ring, and say, You're out of the click, and the next time Murphy sticks his head through the curtain, he's going to be huge, Mike. I mean, it writes itself.
It really does write itself. But again, they the WWE don't like to have easy things happen. You know, don't like to have things write themselves. You know, I mean, there was a time when something like that would happen organically, and Vince or whomever would be writing it at the time would say, "Okay, this thing is happening. I don't think we can stop it. Let's run with it." There
right.
was a time when they would do that. They don't do it anymore, but there was a time.
If Seth Rollins' big come up was Buddy Murphy and Seth Rollins are going to fight because he has undermined Buddy Murphy for 7 solid months. He's made Murphy do things that really were against his principles, but he did them. Murphy finally stood up and said, "I am not going to, you know, brain some girl with a chair because she disagrees with you. I've had enough of this." Gets his ass kicked by the AOP and Seth Rollins. Has that match with Seth Rollins. And this is the first time Seth Rollins takes a loss in a good 20-some-odd minute match where Murphy shows what he can do. That's called a payoff. What a great payoff. What a great payoff. Fans go home happy. Murphy's a star. Seth is still a star because he's only lost the one match. And he could always say, "Well, you listen, Murphy, you know, got lucky. If he thinks this is over, it's not over. You've got plenty of branches on the tree still." Instead, you're wasting your time with Aleister Black, with Samoa Joe, with Kevin Owens, and the whole Viking Raider. It's not going to work. Your hero is Murphy. But you had to make it obvious from the beginning. It's too late now. It's way too late now. Should have been from the very beginning. That's Seth Rollins' dog that he kicks. Every time there's a loss, every time there's a problem, every time something doesn't go well, it's A. Murphy. It's your fault. And Murphy just keeps swallowing it because he thinks his career depends on it. And then finally wakes up that one incident, and that's it. Seth Rollins hasn't polished anybody off. Well, everybody's going to be destroyed that doesn't agree with me, except I can't beat the Street Profits. We can't seem to get out of the way of the Viking Raiders. Kevin Owens keeps seeming to foil us. Aleister Black seems to be tougher than us. Well, I don't know then. Then you can't finish anybody off. In order to be a threat, you have to finish some people off who actually matter. Otherwise, you're not a threat. But you could start with the people who, you know, you say that doesn't matter that much. You could start with a Zack Ryder or Curt Hawkins, where at least you get some sympathy and the crowd says, oh, that's not necessary. And then you tell Zack Ryder or Curt Hawkins, whichever one it is, I don't want to see your ass on your toy figure friggin' site walking through a friggin' Walmart looking for action figures if you're supposed to be hurt. If you do that, you're fired. You want to go on YouTube, then you have the other guy go on YouTube saying, I got to go alone. Thanks to Seth Rollins. Or he's got to go on crutches. Thanks to Seth Rollins. Or I got to push him around in this wheelchair. Thanks to Seth Rollins. Because we're selling this as legit. Where even the announcers are saying, you can't have this. You can't have anarchy where if you disagree with Seth Rollins, you're liable to get injured or crippled. At what point is the Federation going to, you know, step in and say, you can't do this? That makes the difference. He's not going to pick on the AOP. He's going to pick on Murphy because that's the guy who, you know, he, the poor slob who only went with him because his career looked like it was taking a downward spiral. Wasn't the whole idea behind, correct me if I'm wrong, was the whole idea behind Buddy Murphy and Aleister Black having those long series of very hard matches? Wasn't the idea behind that to not only get Aleister Black over, but to make everyone see that Buddy Murphy is truly a very, very good wrestler? Isn't that what it was supposed to be? So if that's what it was supposed to be, wouldn't it be better if we as fans said, we know how good Buddy Murphy is, and Seth Rollins is just keep telling him he isn't? Seth Rollins isn't trying to help him. Seth Rollins is actually trying to keep him down so he can use him as his punching bag and his excuse. That would be the way to handle this in a good situation, Todd, so that we look forward to the moment when Buddy Murphy says, I've had enough.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about what Buddy Murphy and Seth Rollins. And you know, like you said, if it's, I would like to see that, have Buddy Murphy just go out on his own and without the AOP and Seth Rollins and become a face. This way you could get his character rebooted.
Right, repacked. But you do it slowly. You do it slowly. You show little chinks in the armor where it appears Buddy Murphy is second-guessing Seth Rollins, but he goes along with him. That's what the old WWE would have done, Mike. They would have done that in a heartbeat.
They really would have done it in a heartbeat. Look, I just want to stick on the whole strength of the group thing. I mean, look, the Horsemen, DX, the Triple Threat, you know, I can go on naming Aces and Eights. You know, did any of these groups at any time look weak?
No.
You know? No. So even to some extent, you could say the Wyatt family, when they were going good, they never made them look weak. The Shield, they never made them look weak.
No.
You know? So
exactly.
If you want this group to be a group, and you gotta constantly make them look strong. Constantly. You can't be having the leader drop, or you can't be having, you know, two guys that aren't a tag team winning the tag team belts when you got a legitimate tag team there. You can't
right.
be doing that stuff, you know?
And, Mike, listen, you could have a million teases. You could say, okay, we're having, Kevin Owens and, whoever his tag team partner is. Kevin Owens and whoever against Buddy Murphy and Seth Rollins. And every time Kevin Owens gets in the ring, Seth Rollins just tags Buddy Murphy. And when Murphy finally drops that match, Murphy could say, you know, I understand I dropped the match. And I understand I let everybody down, but you wouldn't get in the ring. And Seth Rollins could have said, well, of course not. I'm not that selfish. I was trying to give you the opportunity, buddy. Don't you see that? When Kevin Owens is a big star. If you beat him, that goes good for you. I can beat him anytime. I could beat him anytime. It doesn't matter much to me. I'm already a star. I'm the Messiah. I'm already the Monday Night Messiah. You're nobody. If you beat him, you're elevated. I sacrificed my chance to beat Kevin Owens to give you a chance, buddy. And you're not even grateful? And then Murphy could say, you're right. I didn't think about it that way. It looked like you didn't want to get in the ring, but you're right. I blew it. I'm sorry. And fans know the truth, Mike. Fans know it's not fucking true. He didn't want to fight Kevin Owens. You see, you could do things like that and pull those things until finally Murphy says, look, I woke up and you know, you're an idiot. And fans would know. So it's teasing the fans that it's coming.
Right. And finally, when that fight takes place between Owens and Rollins, and Rollins does lose, the fans will say, well, see, we knew it.
Right. Exactly. There's so much you could do if you just have a decent writing staff. Now, I'm very disappointed in hearing that Paul Heyman totally wrote the Elimination Chamber. And Paul Heyman's idea was, if we already know that Shayna Baszler's going to win, we got to make her look like the toughest bitch on the planet, and she's just got to rip through everybody. Paul Heyman is wrong about that. There was much better ways to do this and still have Shayna Baszler win. We just gave you one. So now I'm even losing confidence in Paul Heyman. At some point, someone with a little bit of creativity and someone who cares has got to take over the writing in WWE and say, we got to protect some of these characters. We got to make some of the heels extremely hard to beat. Some of the faces, people you really, really want to root for. And give them some compelling storylines that people get invested in without leading them down a dead end and saying we never finished it or we ended up stupid. You got to protect all these things. If you can't successfully do that, you're not going to pull this federation out of its doldrums because, again, there's not that many people we're interested in. Kevin Owens has lost a tremendous amount of his fan support since this nonsense has started. The Viking Raiders have none. The AOP aren't over as major heels because they don't do much. Buddy Murphy's not over as a major heel because he's not really a big threat. Seth Rollins isn't even over as a big heel because he gets pinned too much. Eric Rowan's been wasted. Angel Garza's been wasted. Andrade, people respect and say, oh, he's a good wrestler, but he's not going anywhere big. He's not beating any major stars. So what do we got? We got a whole federation filled with, that's not good enough. All these guys are talented. You should care about all of them. That none of them should be afterthoughts. Even your undercard, you should say, we're using the undercard. We're using a Zack Ryder. We're using a Curt Hawkins. We can get heat off people with them. We can get them to help out on major angles by doing this or that or the other thing. There's so many ways you can go with it if you're not lazy and you're creative. And they just won't. They just won't. This Monday Night Raw was boring. It really was. It was boring. There's no other good way to put it. It was boring. And with 3 weeks left to WrestleMania, you should not be having boring Monday Night Raws. Simple as that. Anyway, Mike, final words on it. I mean, what do they need to do to right this ship over there on Raw? Do they need to just, regroup totally or revamp the writing team or what?
Revamp the writing team, and frankly, if I give you that this was a poorly written by Paul Heyman Elimination Chamber, but most of the stuff he's written has been fairly decent, all right? You know, last week's Raw was the beginning and the ending was written by Paul Heyman. They were very, very good, you know? So, and the middle of the Raw, well, what happens? He writes something, and then Butch Collins comes in, McMahon comes in and rips it up and says, well, we're going to go with this. I mean, I thought you were bringing him in, bringing Paul Heyman in and saying, we're going to let you sink, we're going to sink and swim with you. I'm going to take my hands off of it, and you're going to be the man. Okay? Fine. If you're going to do that, fine. Yeah, he's written some poor things. Yes, he's written some good things. But if you're going to keep overruling him, what are we going to think? I mean, the only reason why that we've said that the only reason why on SmackDown that the Fiend character is going to be saved is because of Bray Wyatt, right?
Right.
I mean, it's almost to the point of saying, I'd let Bray Wyatt start writing for Raw. You know?
The bottom line is this, though. Raw this week was so illogical and so badly booked that it couldn't even be enjoyed for the things that you should have enjoyed. We should have enjoyed Edge coming back, but here's the deal. If my wife was beaten up by Randy Orton, I'm not showing up at 9:30 or 9:45. I'm there the minute Raw opens. Okay? So that's what should have happened, is they should have had a match in the ring or had a couple of people in the ring, and all of a sudden here comes Edge and just tells the people, get the out of the ring. And everybody bails. Put a match together nobody cared about, you know. Put two guys here like, and whatever. And then they'd just be like, nope, I ain't dealing with this. And then you have Edge say, Orton, get your ass out here. Then when Randy Orton comes out and Edge says, you're not going to get in the ring. Fine. I don't need you to get in the ring. I'll come to you. The minute he jumps out of the ring, here comes security guards. Here comes police. They're holding him back. Randy Orton's just like, yeah, what are you going to do? That's a hell of a lot better than what you did with MVP. Because, of course, Edge is so mad about what you did to his wife that he says, I'll wait till the end of the show. That doesn't make any sense. We'll send Montez Ford out to say, that doesn't make any sense. Or not Montez. I keep saying Montez Ford. I mean, we'll send out MVP. That doesn't make any sense. So that's badly booked. Rhea Ripley just punching Charlotte in the face is badly booked. You want Rhea Ripley to have the sympathy of the fans. Rhea Ripley needs to get in that ring and say, Charlotte, I wasn't trying to insult you when I said people thought of me as a second-rate Charlotte Flair. I was trying to say that you were my idol. I was trying to say that you're the reason I got in this business. I was trying to say in the nicest way possible that you were my inspiration. And then I met you. And it was a huge letdown, because no matter how good you are, and no matter how great of an athlete you are, you're a lousy person. That makes a difference, because then people say, man, talk about truth to power here. Rhea Ripley's not trying to be, I'm tougher than you. Rhea Ripley's literally saying, you were my hero until I met you. And now I'm fighting you, and I got no respect for you, because as much of a great athlete as you are, you crushed my feelings about the kind of person you would be. Everybody can sympathize with that, because everybody's met somebody who they thought was going to be a great person and ended up being an idiot. So all the fans would sympathize with Rhea Ripley. You got something good going on there. Had you done what we said in the Elimination Chamber, you could have had Becky Lynch come out and say, congratulations, you beat the Riot Squad. That's an achievement. I'm not going to lie. That was damn impressive. But for you to come out here and say you polished off Asuka, who it took me 3 years to beat, you didn't polish off Asuka. You picked the bones after somebody else had gang jumped her. Congratulations. They're not going to gang jump me before WrestleMania, Shayna. Because then fans say, Becky Lynch is absolutely right. And Shayna Baszler is wrong, which is what it's supposed to be. Angel Garza would have got disqualified against Rey Mysterio, or perhaps Andrade would have accidentally cost Garza the match. And you say, I wonder if that was an accident. I wonder. Maybe he's just a little sick of Angel Garza and his routine here. I wonder if that was an accident. You branch on a tree. Those are the things that would have improved Raw. Those are four things that would have changed Raw from a D to at least a B. Because you would have had some excitement and said, wait, there's some branches on this tree, isn't there? Then if you wanted to add that, you know, we start to see the rumblings of Seth Rollins is going to blame Buddy Murphy for all of the losses, and Seth Rollins isn't going to take any losses, which is too late because he's already lost to Montez Ford. Because that's so important. You would have worked your way back up here. You got to rebuild these characters now. You've crushed a lot of them. And now your job is to rebuild them. Maybe you don't care, because maybe after WrestleMania you're going to hit the reset button with a switch to brands. I don't know. But either way, you better think about it, because right now on Raw there's next to nobody to root for. And there's not even that many people we hate. There's not even that many people to boo. Mike, all of those things that we just came up with would have changed this at least to a B.
Right, and think about this. We all like what Becky Lynch had said, you know, in the opening of Raw. What, and I know this would have taken a little bit of timing, but what if almost right at the end of it, as she's talking, as she's fixing to leave the ring, Edge comes out, no music, gets in the ring. Takes the mic from Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch rolls out of the ring. I don't want anything to do with this, because you can see it in his eyes. You know?
Right.
I'm not going to touch this thing. And then you can have him say something or whatever you want to say, and then make the challenge. Get on. Get your ass out here, or else I'm going to come and find you. You know.
I'll tell you when I would have had it, Mike. I would have had it when Rhea Ripley and Charlotte were in the ring. After Rhea Ripley had everything to say to Charlotte, Charlotte could have said, oh, is that what you think of me? Well, why don't you take a shot? Why don't you take your best shot, Rhea? Why don't you do it right here and now? And all of a sudden, bam, here's Edge in the ring. With that look on his face, and they both just say, you know what? Another time. Because then you would have said, oh, that almost exploded, didn't it? But now this is even better, because here's Edge. All of those things would have been better than what they did. All of those things, Mike. They just don't
right.
want to be creative. They just don't want to be. They're just lazy. They just show up on Raw and say, you do this, you do that's good enough. We don't care. It doesn't matter. It does matter. There's nobody left to root for God's sake. There's no excitement. Remember when you used to get that, like the hair on your arms would kind of tingle and you'd be like, ooh, this is going to be great. We don't get that. I don't get that anymore at all, ever, from the WWE. Almost never. They just got the Randy Orton thing was brilliant that they did with Matt Hardy and they did with Beth Phoenix. And the payoff was lousy. You should have had Edge being dragged away by the cops. Literally saying he threatened to kill me. He made a threat. This man made a threat. I want him arrested. That would have added so much fuel to the fire. If they said, you know, Edge is being arrested for what he said. And then you could have had Jerry Lawler say, well, you know, I understand Edge being upset. And I understand that Randy Orton went too far, but you can't threaten to kill somebody. Or this is what happens. You get arrested. So too bad for Edge, but that's the way it goes. I mean, that would have been good. That would have been really good. Nope. Can't do that. Got to get old MVP out there to act like an idiot and say, I'm considering a stable and I'll start with a 50-year-old man with a neck injury. Oh, God, please. Who wrote that? Yeah, Todd, that was absolutely ridiculous, really.
You're absolutely right about the MVP thing and the Edge and Randy Orton. That was so stupid money last night with what MVP said about Edge. Or maybe I'll build a stable, use Edge as a foundation.
I'll start with a 50-year-old guy with a neck injury. I can't take it. I don't know who's writing that stuff. If it's Paul Heyman, then shame on you, Paul. You've lost it. I'm sorry. Anyway, folks, enjoy NXT and AEW. We'll be back here on Friday with a report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.